Joe's in the Spurscast, episode 538. My name is Paul Garcia, and I am the host of the Spurscast. Joining me on this episode, episode 538, is Project Spurs' founder, Michael DeLeon. Mike, how are you feeling right now, man?
I'm feeling all right. I had coffee this morning. I had Frankfurt, so well, but I'm all right, I guess.
I saw you tweet something about how people were complaining about coffee. I didn't know that was a thing. You can just tell. I'm like, go ahead.
It's a big thing on Twitter today. Yesterday, everybody was like going after Circle K. I'm just like, calm down. They like had it free for years. Like, they just want to make some money. Now it's funny.
Yeah, you can tell that mine's just like the only people I follow are like steady, like nerdy people, like with stats and everything. Because yeah. I don't even see that kind of that like cultural part of San, you know, just that conversation of the Spurs losses in there. All right, Mike, let's go ahead and get into this Spurscast episode 583. And obviously, this is coming. You know, I put a funny tweet out yesterday because I knew that Spurs fans were going to be angry at this game because of what happened, where they gave up two 19-point leads. I mean, they could have basically been coming back to San Antonio with a 2-0 lead, basically almost like been on the verge of like getting this thing over with like a sweep or possibly five or six games. But now, obviously, we know that we watched the game; it turned around. That wasn't the case. A lot of people were very angry last night. Especially with the Spurs giving up those two leads. So let's begin just a quick little recap of what happened, and then we'll dive into this actual conversation, into the nuts and bolts of this game of what happened for the Spurs and the Nuggets in Game 2. So the Denver Nuggets came back from two 19-point deficits to beat the Spurs 114-105 on Tuesday night in Denver. The series is now tied 1-1, but the Spurs do still hold home court because they won a game in Denver. With 4:28 left in the third quarter, here are the Spurs up by 19 points, and it looks like they're about to rout Denver. Really put this young team away for the series. Almost basically what it looked like with that 19-point lead. Coach Pop takes out a few of the starters, takes out specifically DeMar DeRozan, Derek White, Bryn Forbes, and he puts in Davis Bertans, Marco Bellinelli, and Patty Mills, along with Aldridge and Rudy Gay, for a big stretch here. Of 4 minutes, and in that 4 minute stretch around that time, the Nuggets go on a 16-2 run, and they cut the Spurs' lead all the way down to 5. The Spurs kind of rebound at the end of the third quarter, and they go into the fourth with a 7-point lead. When the fourth starts, it's kind of back and forth. San Antonio's hanging in there with Denver. Denver's right there in striking distance. But then with 3:34 left in the fourth, it's a 1-point game. Spurs are leading by one, should I say, and then the Nuggets go on an 11-2 run. Jamal Murray specifically goes crazy during that stretch, and all of a sudden the Spurs find themselves down by 10, and it was over. Coach Pop pulls the starters, and we know how it ended. The Spurs' bad road defense showed up in the second half, especially in that fourth quarter where they allowed 39 points. Jamal Murray, who had been cold all night, goes for 21 of his 24 in the fourth. Just your quick initial reactions from what happened last night.
It was one of those things where I felt like if you watch Jamal Murray this year, that's just kind of his thing. He'll have like cold streaks sometimes, and luckily the Nuggets have had enough depth around him. They've had guys like Morris that have been able to come in and spell him, or they've had Jokic able to get in there and make up the difference. And so it was kind of like it was going to happen. At some point, I felt like he was going to start making those shots. So basically, that's what it came down to, is he started making those shots. The defense had a few issues. But even some of those shots, it seemed like he was defending well, and he was still knocking those down. So it's kind of like, what do you do in that case? They come out from Denver getting one game there, so I think you can't complain too much about that. I'm sure everybody would love for them to be coming back to San Antonio 2-0, though.
Yeah, for sure. And so let's really now dive into this game, Mike, both ends of the court. We're obviously going to start like how John and I started the other day, which is defense, because this is kind of the Spurs' basically life and death situation on whether or not they're going to win or lose ball games depends on how they play on defense. And, they had a pretty good first quarter where they held Denver to 21, but then from there on, Denver got, 20, 28, 26, and of course we saw that 39-point quarter in the fourth. So let's first go to the closest place, on the floor on defense, which is the rim. Denver got about their typical amount of shots at the rim in this game. They shot pretty well, 64%, which is 1% above their usual season average. The Spurs did a better job on the glass, on the defensive glass. Denver only got 7 offensive rebounds and then also just 8 second chance points. Now, the counter argument could be that maybe just because Denver actually shot the ball better, that's why there wasn't as many rebounds for them. Some guys who specifically really all four of the Nuggets' big four played well in the areas of the paint. Paul Millsap really took Rudy Gay off the dribble. Davis Bertans, too, got a lot of his points at the paint. 6 of his 7 shots at the rim came from there. Nikola Jokic got a mixture of his shots coming from at the rim. Gary Harris and Jamal Murray, they use those really good backdoor screens from Jokic and those dribble handoff actions from Jokic and Millsap, and they got a lot of different points at the rim too. So what did you think about the Spurs' defense at the rim?
I mean, I thought, like, especially I was looking at Pirtle a lot in this game, and I thought he had done well, and I felt like even LaMarcus did a good job at on Jokic, and really Jokic just took what he got, what the Spurs would give him. If they gave him space to shoot, he'd shoot it. If not, he kind of works with the offense and hit Gary Harris like on those, like I said, that like backdoor play, and he just found the players that he needed to. And I was impressed with Millsap having like a bounce back game that he did, because he was another one along with Murray that kind of just lost in the first game. And this is just, I think what I've seen from this team all year is when they're all healthy and when they're playing well, they are really deep and they can play really good basketball. So, yeah, I mean, it's just, that's just one of those things that if they're all going, it's going to be hard to beat them regardless of how many points you're up by.
Yeah, and those are two things that I wrote down. When you said that specifically, playing well, when they're playing well is when you just see this juggernaut Spurs defense. And, you know, there was two notes that I like to take notes by quarter during the playoffs. And in the second quarter, I have it right here. I put San Antonio closing off the rim, multiple defenders always clogging the lane, so Denver really couldn't get in when the Spurs were playing well in the second quarter. And then also in the third quarter, I put that Denver was being forced to take a lot of mid-range shots too before they went on that run that I mentioned a while ago. And Pirtle was huge in that regard. LaMarcus, like you mentioned, was huge. And so it's more about situational, in my opinion. Like, the Spurs did play good defense at the rim, but then when it just fell apart, I mean, it just all fell apart. And, you know, they couldn't stop anyone from getting back to the rim. So now, Mike, let's move on to the other area of the floor, which is now the mid-range. So the Spurs continue to, you know, do those drop-back plays off the pick-and-roll, off the dribble handoffs, and so they're kind of conceding the mid-range to the Nuggets. So Denver took 40% of their shots in the mid-range, which is 8% more than they usually want to. They shot 40.5% from there during the game. Guys that had pretty good mid-range games, it was Jokic did pretty well from there, and so did Jamal Murray, specifically in the fourth quarter when he got hot. He had a lot of, and like you mentioned, they were hot. I mean, they were contested mid-range twos, especially with Derek White's defense there. What did you think about the Spurs' defense in that mid-range area against Denver?
Yeah, I mean, I think a lot of times, especially when you have those type of players, you have to defend at the mid-range and then also in the post, because they could cut and stuff like that. But I thought, like I said, I thought they had done pretty well all game. You know, it was just one of those things where it just kind of, I mean, I think like you said it, when things go wrong, I mean, everything kind of comes unraveling. And it kind of all happened when Derek White went out of the game and the defense kind of dropped off a little bit, and then it just kept on going, and Rudy Gay couldn't make stops that he needed. So that was just tough at the worst time, really.
Yeah, for sure. We're going to get into Derek White a little bit, and I'm going to actually ask you that question about whether or not he needs to play a little bit more. Let's move on now to the three-point line. The Spurs did a great job in terms of not giving Denver too many three-point attempts. Typically, Denver likes to shoot 32% of their shots from three. This time, it was only 24%. But we knew that Denver wouldn't miss all those open looks in a second game in a row, and that for sure wasn't the case. The Nuggets shot 42% of this game from three, you know, compared to their season average of 36%. Several Nuggets had made multiple three-pointers. Jokic made two. Gary Harris made three. Jamal Murray made two, like we saw in the fourth quarter. And then even off the bench, Malik Beasley made two. Now, the Spurs were lucky that Will Barton still hasn't found his range. He was 0-6 from three-point range. For me, I think it's also just like when we were talking about the paint. I think with the three-point defense with the Spurs, it was more about situational when they were turning the ball over. When Denver started picking up the pace, they got more better opportunities at the three. What did you think about the Spurs' three-point defense?
Yeah, and I also noticed it seems like a lot of times they would take advantage. And this is one thing we didn't see in game one, was them in transition being able to knock down shots or take advantage. But in this game, they were able to do that in transition and knock down threes when they needed to. And when they're given, yeah, I mean, they're lucky. The Spurs were lucky that Will Barton was 0-6 and really has had a bad shooting such as this entire series so far. But you know, Jokic, I mean, obviously he's got that range. And Gary Harris is one guy that I always thought would be the kind of difference maker or the X factor in the series. Mm-hmm. When I read a preview, I was like, if he, because all season since he came back from injury, he hadn't played very well or up to his level, I think. And if he was able to do that this series, then it would be kind of a difference maker. And he's able to do that, and he's able to knock down some threes and give them that help that they need, because, you know, without him, and then I think with Beasley, then obviously the three-point shooting, that's going to be really hard for them to do anything, because all they have in that case is their pitch. And so the Spurs, has done well. I felt like in those just some cases also where even Murray's were pretty well defended. He just knocked him down. It's like when you get hot, you get hot.
Yeah, no, for sure. Looking at the free throw rate for Denver, they scored about three more than they usually do in that statistic. Millsap specifically got to the line 7 times, made 5 of them. Jokic made 5 of 6 free throws, and then Jamal Murray throughout the night made 6 of 7. Some other areas that I kind of wanted to zone in on was just the transition defense. This was something that I point out on Twitter for like two days straight, where it was so shocking to me that Denver didn't make any fast break points on the Spurs' defense in game 1. I even told John about that, just because I know that the Spurs don't have a great transition defense. Me and John kind of like laughed about it, how that's kind of the one thing Pop's always trying to focus in on for this group, and they always say, you know, they at least give up 14 a game. Where in game 1, they didn't give up any fast break points, but of course now Denver picked up the pace. They got out on the floor, in the open floor. They made the Spurs turn the ball over, especially in the fourth and third quarter. And we saw that they scored 21 fast break points. Their transition opportunities increased from 11% in game 1 to 15% in game 2. How do you think, I guess the question is, you know, how much of a, that, again, that's the first adjustment for the Spurs is, again, really watching that transition defense, because if not, the Nuggets can just go on these runs like we saw. What do you think about that?
Yeah, I mean, what I thought about, because obviously adjustments in the game in the playoffs are huge, and that's kind of what I thought of as definitely we'll see from game 1 to 2, we'll see Michael Malone, see how he can get more transition buckets, and then I think now from 2 to 3, we're going to see how Pop can defend the transition a little bit better, because I mean, that has been a weak point all season long, and so that's definitely going to be something that I think continues to kind of dictate how the series goes.
Yeah, and here's a question that's really not amplified by stats or quantitative. It's more of a qualitative question. Do you think that now Denver has like kind of got a little big four now? Like, where starting the playoffs, it was supposed to be Jokic and Jamal Murray as their go-to players. Now all of a sudden, Paul Millsap gets 20 points for you. Gary Harris is scoring 20 per game now, 23, and then 20 in game 1. So now is that a problem for the Spurs, the fact that that Millsap knows he can score? Rudy Gay had a tough time defending him. So did Davis Bertans. And then also Harris is getting by a lot of the defenders, especially with those backdoor cuts from Jokic, and then just getting open threes all the time. Is that a problem for the Spurs, the fact that these two guys, who are only scored about 12 points each in the regular season, are now all of a sudden scoring close to 20in this last game?
I think so. It's funny because I read a lot of previews to this, and everybody was like, this is a team without a superstar, and they're not going to, you know, last long or anything like that. And I was just like, well, that's the thing. The thing is that they haven't had a superstar or whatever all year, and they still competed with the Golden State Warriors for that number 1 spot. And they did it with so many injuries all season long. They had so many injuries. But the thing about that, the byproduct of that, is that they were able to have players that could play bigger roles, like Morris, like Beasley, and now Harris is starting to come in, and Millsap was out. He was able to come back now and start to get some momentum. So, yeah, this team is definitely more than just those two players. And, you know, once you start using or utilizing those bench players even more, that could be pretty scary. So I think especially with as much confidence as Millsap and Harris are playing with right now, it's definitely more of kind of a big four, like I said.
And not only that, I think the fact that Jamal Murray got his, you know, his confidence going too. Fact, you know, I mean, throughout the night, I was almost like shocked that he just kept missing all those shots throughout the game. I mean, he even missed an open dunk, and then all of a sudden, here comes the fourth quarter, and the guy could just not miss him, and he was just right on fire as he made a lot of those contested shots over Derek White. All right, Mike. So now let's move over to the offense for the Spurs. So let's go ahead and begin closer to the rim. So frequency, they're not a team that takes a lot of shots at the rim. They took 31% of their shots from the rim in this game, which is about 4% over their season average. Shot 63% at the rim. I think the one guy who did a great job of getting more involved and dispersed, you know, finding him better was LaMarcus Aldridge. He finishes with 24 points, 1 offensive rebound, 3 assists, 40% from the floor, and just 1 turnover. And the Spurs did a great job of putting him in a lot more pick and roll action and getting him to get different mismatches. And then also just, you know, when he catches the ball against Jokic or Millsap or someone, he could easily just spin around and give his patented a little you know, jump hook. What did you think about Aldridge's bounce back performance in this one?
Yeah, that was a big one, because if you look at just numbers after game 1, you think that was all Aldridge throws and obviously White, but when you take a closer look and see, you know, he wasn't very successful in that first game, and it was basically all volume because how many shots he shot. But this one, he was a lot more, I feel like, efficient with his shots and you know, was really smart about the shots that he took and seemed to be a lot more aggressive, especially against a guy as big as Jokic. It's kind of crazy to see him play like that. So that was really nice to see, and he's going to probably have to play that way the entire series.
No, yeah, for sure. So that's good. Again, I think that the Spurs got to continue that in Game 3, is putting him in more pick and roll action to get him better looks, you know, on the switches and those mismatches and that timing for him. Let's move on to the mid-range now. The Spurs typically take 47% of their shots from mid-range. In this game, they went up to 50%. No, it wasn't the 66% they shot in Game 1. They shot it at 41.5%. A lot of that was DeRozan mainly. He made a lot of contested twos. You know, we talked about Jamal Murray. DeRozan made a lot of crazy shots in this game.
Yeah.
Derek White, of course, was just his composed, you know, doesn't look like a second-year kind of player, guard who just makes the right plays, makes the right reads on offense. Takes, you know, if somebody gives him that mid-range shot, he's going to take it if it's open, if it's in his rhythm. Aldridge didn't have too good of a game from mid-range. And then, of course, we know Rudy Gay really struggled in this one. In his area of mid-range, he shot 2-9 from the floor. So what do you think about their mid-range, San Antonio?
Yeah, I mean, really, that's definitely, especially for a team that has kind of been known for mid-range offense, that was kind of worrisome to see that after the game. Obviously, you know, DeMar did what he's been, but as well defended as he was on those, I mean, he's probably not always going to get those type of numbers if they continue to D him up that way. So, I mean, somebody else has got to really come through I'm looking at Rudy Gay. I think he's got to have, like, a bounce-back performance pretty soon here.
Yeah, for sure. Let's move over to the three-point line now, somewhere where the Spurs don't typically shoot from. So the Spurs don't take a lot of threes. You know, 27% of their shots come from the three-point line, which is 30th in the league during the season. This game, they went even further down to 19% of their shots came from three. Accuracy, this was a bad shooting night for the Spurs. They only made 28% of their threes. And typically, with this team, Pop has said it all year, where since they don't have a great defense, you know, they really need to make three-pointers. And in this game, they didn't do that. No Spurs player in this game made more than one three. So that's how you can tell that they were off, especially the guys off the bench, like Patty Mills, Bertans, Bellinelli, those, even Rudy Gay, who usually makes a pretty good amount of threes. So I put the bench stats together. The bench shot 8 of 23, the four core guys, which are Bertans, Mills, Bellinelli, and Rudy Gay. They shot 8 of 23 from the floor for 21 points, 3 turnovers, and 10 assists. So you can just tell that this is a really game where the whole bench struggles, and specifically, we know that the majority of that responsibility does fall on Rudy Gay's shoulders, where he had 5 points, 3 offensive rebounds, 3 assists, and 2 turnovers on 22% shooting. What did you think about the 3-point shooting for San Antonio?
I think that also shows when Brent Forman is knocking down shots and how important he is, because he was 1-4 on those shots on threes. And so, and you know, it's the bench. When they go to the bench, a lot of times it's Marco, Rudy, and Patty that carry them. That area sometimes Davis, but you know, when they all kind of struggle a little bit, I mean, that's their bench really. So that's going to be tough, especially when they struggle from deep. And like I said, couple that with Brent's performance, and it's like you can't really look anywhere else for 3-point shots.
Yeah, no, for sure. You know, they basically got a hit is what we're saying here. Free throw rate, Spurs took a lot more free throws than usual. Most of that was the responsibility of Aldridge and DeRozan. Aldridge shot 8 of 10 from the free throw line, DeRozan shot 9 of 9, and again, just getting those guys involved, getting them to the line, helps out the Spurs' half-court offense specifically. So now let's look at some kind of questions going forward for the Spurs. I guess this is a question for both ends, and you kind of mentioned it a while ago, how much more do you think Pop can give Derek White as far as playing time? Because, I mean, he only played 32 minutes. I thought he played more than that, but it was just 32. And really, I mean, I know a lot of fans, a lot of people got upset that, you know, that's kind of when they fell apart, was in that third quarter when he took a break. You know, he has to rest. Eventually, he had started the third quarter. But it's like, how much do you think Pop might need to push him and giving him more minutes, since he can, because you can just tell their defense falls apart when he's not on the floor, and also their offense falls apart a little bit because he's a very composed player in the pick and roll and kind of just orchestrating, getting guys where they need to go. And without that, Aldridge rush shots, Rudy Gay rush shots, you know, Patty Mills kind of, you know, he just plays a lot of energy. So what do you think about increasing Derek White's minutes?
Yeah, I mean, that's just a hard one because obviously you can't increase him. It's a playoff and it's going to be most likely looking like it might be a long series, so you don't want to tire a guy out like that. But I think it's going to be kind of situational depending on where they're at in the game. But at the time that he went out, it seemed like they had a comfortable lead. But then as soon as he went out, then there's like a turnover, and then, you know, they go on this crazy rally. So it's kind of like, okay, so maybe when things, you know, get that bad, that's when you got to bring him back in. And I don't know, maybe try to push him to about 35 or so, but even so, you just really never know. You've got to kind of see where he's at and see where the team is at, because I don't think anybody could have expected that it was gonna, you know, it was gonna get that bad that quickly. And then at that point, it was kind of like, what else can you do about it? They're making shots, and even the defense wasn't terrible at points, and they were still making those shots. So that's a tough one. But maybe when he does go to the bench, I mean, you've got to have somebody else out there that can play D, or somebody else that can handle the ball a little better. I'm not sure what the answer is really. That's kind of Pop's gonna have to figure something out.
Yeah, exactly. So I think that it's like one thing they could try to do is probably, you're right, increase his minutes. I think maybe like 35 to 38 might be possible. Probably not 40 on a Coach Pop team for a second year player. But also, I know that Zach Lowe pointed this out after game one, was the fact that Pop tried to stagger LaMarcus and DeRozan's minutes, so he wanted to make sure he had one of those two players on the floor at all times. Well, then maybe now you got to have that approach with DeRozan and Derek White in terms of ball handling, so that way you have one of those two guys on the floor at all times, so kind of stagger their minutes a little bit. Now, Aldridge only played, DeRozan only played 32 himself, so he and Derek played around the same amount of minutes, 32 each. So I wonder if maybe you can increase both of their minutes. That way you don't have lineups out there with so much Patty Mills and Marco Bellinelli next to each other. And then also just nobody who can kind of penetrate and organize the offense on those ends. And then, of course, you know, the defense is kind of just, you know, that's what it is. Without Derek, they're really going to struggle. So, we'll see what happens there. It was really cool to see that Rudy Gay did take responsibility. You know, he basically came out to the media yesterday and he owned it. He said, you know, I had a terrible game. He basically said that he won't have a game. You know, he's gonna work his best to not have a game like that. And that's obviously what was one of my big takeaways, was the fact that, like, last night, Denver had, like, a big four, like I mentioned. Four guys who got over 20 points. And here were the Spurs with just Derek White, DeRozan, and Aldridge. And who was that fourth scorer? Who was that fourth playmaker? It's typically Rudy Gay, but on this night it wasn't.
Yeah, no, definitely. And I like seeing that as well, just because. And really, I mean, it's a long series, and something happened. Look at Murray, and if he had hung his head after that first game, or even this game, and if he had just kind of given up. And so it's just one of those things that happens. Playoffs are a different beast altogether, and I'm sure he'll be fine coming back. And we'll see how he does for sure. But it's definitely gonna make this, I think, for much more interesting, just to see how they come out on tomorrow is the next
Thursday game. Game three.
I feel like even through these two games, I don't have a really great handle on what's gonna happen for the rest of the series now.
Yeah, no, for sure. And that's how I am too. I mean, it's almost like a pendulum. Like, at one point, San Antonio looks like the best team in the series, and you don't even think they're a 7 seed. But then at other points, it's like Denver, like, they just look unstoppable at times. And it's just a weird series. And, you know, that's basically how the playoffs are. And that's why at the end of the day, there's going to be one team that's going to win this series, whether, you know, we don't know how many games it's going to be. So game three tips off Thursday night in San Antonio. Now the series moves there. We'll see, you know, what happens with the Spurs. You know, what is Coach Pop focused on the defensive end? Something I forgot to mention was in the fourth quarter, when the Spurs only scored 23 points on offense, Denver started trapping a lot more of their pick and roll action. I guess trying to get the ball out of DeRozan's hands, or making other players try to create plays for San Antonio. So I think that might be something to watch too, because they had like Jokic and they had like Plumlee coming out pretty far on those pick and rolls. So I think that's something to watch if you're San Antonio on offense for game three. All right, thank you, Mike, for joining me for SpursCast episode 538. SpursCast listeners, make sure you're checking out ProjectSpurs.com. We have all of our playoff pieces up there following each game. Also, thanks again to Mike for mixing and producing this episode. For Michael DeLeon, I'm Paul Garcia. Thank you, and have a great day.